Welcome back. Welcome back. It's Midday with Marcus Maben. 8150, 93.9 is the number. 93.9 is the station. We're rolling along on a beautiful, brisk, and beautiful, beautiful, beautiful Friday. A Friday where we make it through each week, and you just want to say, whew. Trying times in the University of Louisville, trying times in the city, but you just get to the end of the week and want to go, we are at that point, people, but there is still a little bit of time to go before we get there. Normally, I say Steve Rummage is in the building, Brian Hall is in the booth, but not Steve Rummage. It's just Brian Hall in the
booth.
We want Brian.
Thank you, guys.
I can't believe you don't have a We Want Brian chant.
I don't know. Steve is just, I think that's from a movie.
Steve Wilkos. He used to be the Jerry Springer.
Yeah, the bouncer.
What does Snoop Dogg have on his head? That is a full-blown bedtime silk wrap on Snoop Dogg's head right now.
I never really question what Snoop Dogg does.
That's exactly like he is to the point where Snoop Dogg can get away with wearing that's just a satin bedtime scarf on his head.
He's one of the handful of guys that can kind of dress as he wants or wear what he wants, and it's not seen as
ridiculous. Can you go to the sound real quick, please?
Yeah,
is that possible? Yeah. People, I'm looking at Snoop Dogg in a silk bedtime scarf. I can't believe it. And, of course, he has sunglasses on. I can't miss this opportunity to hear Snoop Dogg.
Getting poised into getting back right because to beat the Vikings wasn't easy. And they beat the hell out of the Vikings. I didn't expect that. And he had a great game. So if he could prepare for that, he got 2 weeks too. So let's see what Doug can do in 2 weeks. You know what I'm saying? Don't sleep on the underdog, because the underdog becomes the wonderdog. I used to be the underdog once upon a time.
Snoop, when was that?
In my other life.
Snoop, I got a question for you, because you're used to being on the biggest
How
stages.
How can you miss a chance to listen to Snoop Dogg?
I don't know. We had to throw him up there for a minute. The Patriots, just seeing lining up on the field. So what would you say to the Eagles?
Right.
Since you're a coach, how would you fire them up to not be intimidated when they see New England with that dynasty?
They put their pants on the same way we do. So all we got to do is lock and load and go do our job. They men just like us. They fall and they fold just like we do. So we just got to handle our mission and do our job and worry about us. And then everything else to take care of itself.
You've been coaching kids for years.
I appreciate that, Brian. People, that was so welcome to Midday with Marcus Maben moment. Goodness gracious.
That was on the fly.
Right. And for those, Steve's fine. Listen, Steve got a lot of other life goes on outside of Midday with Marcus Maben. He is fine. He just was, he's just kind of, maybe he can make it in, maybe couldn't. He chose not to get. But Brian, I will say this. Yesterday was adventurous.
It was.
Wednesday, I'll start from Wednesday to Thursday. We kind of had a role reversal with myself and most of my opinions. I mean, I have been, let's just say it loud and clear. I have been Kenny Killjoy for the last 48 hours.
Man, you got us all into a bad mood right before the game, you know.
And you know what I got to say? It felt good. Y'all thought I was going to say sorry. No, it felt good. It felt good, but here's the problem. Now, the traditional Marcus is back. Now, the retrospective Marcus is back. Now, I'm riding in, and everybody knows I have my greatest moments, my greatest epiphanies on the way to the court. And now I had that moment where I said, you know what? Virginia really did all they could do to beat us in that game.
They're pretty good. They're pretty good.
You know what? After much, much reflection, those Louisville boys went to Charlottesville, Virginia to get a win. Right?
Yeah, it was probably one of their best played games. I mean, obviously you can't. It's hard to say that when you have a 10-point loss and you're a 16-16, but it was one of the most. I saw the most out of them in that.
Here's
game.
The thing, I've had this opinion about Louisville just starting to scratch the surface. Right? But even at their 50%, just starting to get it, scratch the surface, and 50%, that's good. That's Louisville playing good and getting it going. I mean, potential, like there's room for growth. Everybody has tons of room for growth. But Louisville playing at a 50%, let's just use that as the base, as the game number. And that's a good number, people, because, I mean, 100% is unreal, you know. But 50% efficiency out of Louisville beats 80% of their teams. Kind of in a low bar rate, you know, rating. And everybody else is playing, you know, at their 60s and 70s. Here's the thing. UVA played in their 85-90s, right? UVA's game was in their Duke-Louisville back-to-back games. UVA is probably in their 90s, as far as their, you know, their efficiency, their ball possession. Like, they're doing. Duke did not play bad either, right? Had a lot of, you know, had some issues, but did not play bad. Mm-hmm. Virginia is maxing out with their, you know, their game. They peaked against Louisville in hindsight.
Well, the take that I kind of got from it was, yeah, they still beat us, but they beat us playing our game. And what I mean by that is we forced them to play a little bit of our game, and we're probably the first team to do that, you know, because, you know, Virginia's typically scoring in the 50s and 60s. They put up 74, and obviously that was because of their over 50% shooting from three and all that, but...
I know!
But we got them playing our game a
little
bit.
Brian, I watched a game, and I let my psychopathic expectations for this team to say, listen, I don't care. They shouldn't get a shot off. You know, like, I went total Rick Pitino mode. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know those plays where somebody hits some tough shot, and Rick's just still stomping and yelling. And you're like, come on, man.
Come on, man.
Come on. That was a lucky heave buzz, you know.
Rick would still get mad. Be like, you got to get out there and close out on the defender.
Yes, that's what I was doing yesterday. That's what I've been doing the last 48 hours. I'm yelling at Dangadale. Like, he's, you know what I'm saying? Like he's a lottery. Mm-hmm. Like, he's a lottery pick right now. I'm yelling, Race Ball, what'd he go, 8-for-10?
Yeah, he did. That's great, man.
Ray went 8-for-10. And you know what I came in here talking about, Brian?
What's that?
The one play where he drove to the basket and didn't extend the ball to finish strong.
Yeah, I heard some people on some other shows saying Mark's being pretty hard on Dingadell.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I am.
You're the older brother right now.
Yes.
For Dingadell. Just getting hard after
him. And you know what I gave him? You know what I gave him? I gave all of them the Jalen Reeves-Maven treatment.
Yeah. You little, yeah. Well, you know what?
Gave me that treatment. I give it to everybody else.
You know what I always tell people, though? I mean, the people that you're the hardest on, you're hard on them because you know they're capable of more.
It's a fact. And as an adult, you realize how much of a fact that is.
Yeah.
Right? Like 8-for-10? 8-for-10?
Yeah.
And I promise you, people, nothing I say in here is a made-up phony take. You know, my emotions about the game were true emotions. I wasn't setting people up for anything. I felt that way, and I felt like we should have won, and I felt like we left some food on the table. And I'm telling you, just to go down the line, Dangadell, I'm watching Dangadell, right? And he doesn't catch somebody from behind to make the block, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't see full passion and effort. I didn't see the dive. The dive, people who dive are, when you dive on the ground, right? The reason everybody applauds and stands up and gives you a standing ovation is because diving is the 110%.
Yeah.
You listen, trying to get to the ball, that's 100%. You know?
Diving is 110.
Diving is 110.
I get that, yeah.
Right? And I, in a frustrated moment, in a frustrated idea and an expectation for my season to turn into a championship form season. I literally, cliche-wise, need 110% out of everybody at all times, see, which is an unreasonable expectation, but it's my expectation.
Here's the thing. You should be scared when Marcus stops talking about you. As long as Marcus is talking about you, he's still got faith in you.
Right.
So, Ding Adell, take that. You know, right. You know, Marcus has a lot of faith in you to be the best player on the team.
And again, I felt like I was being fair to him by saying, I don't think you're being selfish that you don't want to pass. I think you're being selfish by looking at the basket instead of looking to open it up for somebody else. Like, not an active selfishness, just kind of a, you know, passive selfishness. So,
do you think that Ding is just having a trouble, you know, recognizing his role with this team?
Yes.
And that it's a thing where he feels he's got too much pressure on himself to be that go-to guy when he's more of a guy that needs to be the role guy.
There's five different aspects of pressure. I mean, you said, listen, unavoidable NBA pressure, right? We know that for a fact. There's unavoidable.
Did Patino put that pressure on him?
Nah.
In the sense that he went, being a draft pick.
Dang Adele went and tested the waters, right?
Yeah.
When you test the waters once, you can't test them again. So it has to be clear you're a first rounder or you're not going at all. Mm-hmm. Like, he doesn't even have the test run in his back pocket anymore, right?
Yeah.
So Dang Adele has a pressure to make it, right? A different pressure that he can't test the waters anymore, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, I kind of put that in 1A and 1B. Now, you have a Dang Adele who's also a captain, right? He's a legitimate captain on the team. So even without being like almost thrust into the position of being a captain, it didn't seem to really happen natural, right? Mm-hmm. You have those three aspects. You have the adjustment to a new coach aspect, right?
Yeah.
And you have the injury aspect. He's been out his first year. He sat out 80% of the year mm-hmm. out of injury. All of these things can derail, you know, what kind of season he has. He has a first round exit from last year. Like,
That's what I was going to say, is because I feel like the pressure mounted right before the season. And the reason I say that is because Patino's been claiming him as a draft pick, you know, a first-round draft pick for a while now. But I think in the back of Patino's mind, he did not expect Donovan Mitchell to go pro. And he expected Donovan Mitchell to be that go-to guy for the team this year, where Ding Adele could still settle into that number two spot. Because I think Patino knows that Ding Adele was not going to be that go-to guy. But still be a solid NBA player, a do-it-all kind of guy.
And I've said this. I've said you can speak, and without this being an uncomfortable, you know, generalization, you can speak a language, right? But you can't interpret which one is gassing you up or which one, you know, like, things to him may be just a little more literal. So when he hears NBA people or people just saying, oh, he's a first rounder for sure, like, he doesn't really know that there's
different types of first
rounders. There's 250 players that we all call potential first, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But, and you know, the way you consume it, it's like, you know, mommy, you told me I could be anything I want, you know what I'm saying?
Well, when you hear that you're going to be a first round pick, you think you're a star, when a lot of times some first round picks are still specialty guys. Like, they're a shooter,
right?
Or they're a guy who just does everything average or something like that. Not every guy who's a first round pick is guaranteed to be a star and a well-rounded player.
Right. And this is just saying, if your theory is true, if your theory about Dang Adele and the pressure is true, like, we might be missing missing the whole point on that one. But still, we go back to the conversation of these kids actually brought it in hindsight. And I held them to incredible standards. Like, I held, you have to give me that name because I'm not logged in. Okay, the incredible standards. Okay, we did the 8-for-10 Ray Spalding. We did the Dang Adele. Like, he knocked the ball out of Ray Spalding's hands twice and Anas Mahmood's hand at least once, right? I was mad at him for aggressively, over-aggressively going for the ball. Like, think about that. Think about it. I'm turning into a coach right before my own very eyes. Man. Like, it was just unacceptable for him to attack that basketball. Here's the thing. Quinn Snyder, and people, everybody's going to get their turn on this one. Quinn Snyder, right? He gets to this basket he kind of looked like he had a bully ball thing getting to that basket, right? Here's the problem. I'm mad at Quinn Snyder. I'm emotional. I'm not mad at Quinn Snyder. I'm mad about the game and the result, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know that I've said, Quinn, you get to the basket and you get that floater up on the rim, right?
Okay.
I have Anis Mahmood and Ray Spalding right around the basket and a soft floater going up to the rim, which has about a 50, let's just say Quinn Snyder's floater around the basket has, when he gets in the lane, that shot has at least a 50% chance of going in. I have Ray Spalding and Anis Mahmood who don't have to rebound soft shots. They actually can tip the ball in, right? I have two of those right around my basket, right?
Yeah.
It didn't work out. For whatever reason, he doesn't get it up. It floats, it misses. They don't get the tip in. What better point blank opportunities? He may have had two muffled, possessions where he fell on the ground. So the optics of Quinn Snyder on the ground and the other team going the other way is like, what are you doing? Right? I would have given anything to get an aggressive Quinn Snyder going to the basket like he did. Listen, he didn't get the call. The guy got his hands on the ball. The same thing happened. Ryan McMahon was on defense, and Jerome goes to the middle of the lane. They kind of tie up the ball. He gets an and one, right? Ryan Mack had a perfect defensive possession, right? With the exact same thing Quinn Snyder did. They could not get around our guards and get to the basket. They didn't get any drive around, whip our guys' butts. Like, we made them step back and shoot challenge shots the entire game.
Mm-hmm. I was trying to find a breaking news sounder. I was going to... Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. Marcus Maben is now applying for an assistant coaching job at the University of Louisville.
I know. Stick to motivational speaker, Marcus Maben. Like,
I like it because you have a different perspective that a lot of people don't. You are a former player. You understand a lot more. When and I sit there and I've watched a couple games with you here when you're going to do a post game show or have done the pregame show, and watching with you, it's different. You watch different aspects of the game where you can tell, like, oh, this guy over here is getting frustrated because,
right,
Giannis is getting in his head, and this guy over here is, he's going to go baseline here.
You can see it all, and let's be honest, it's two different people watching the game. Like, without making me sound crazy on the radio, there's probably three different people that, there's scouting film Marcus, there's during game Marcus, and there's right post game. But back to my original point, I would have paid for an aggressive Quinn Snyder to get that close to the basket and get a floater up off the glass. I don't like the fact that he's going left and floating it to the right, but welcome to 2018. Like, that's still a point-blank shot, and he hits a lot of them. He's been scoring, and he's been contesting. We didn't give up two, three layups max the entire game. I would have died to have a team hold Virginia to the shots they shot that entire game. So that's just Ray, Dang, and Quentin, right? Mm-hmm. Let's just do this. Do you see how far and how money Ryan McMahon was?
Yeah. He was knocking him down from half court almost.
Did you see how confident, how money? I mean, he was locked in.
His confidence never lacks. He's willing to throw it up there, whether he's missed two or three in a row.
You're losing by six or seven against Virginia. He shoots a 26-footer, and they were going in like nobody's business. Your coach was making substitutions and getting exactly what he expected. When you can start putting a guy in and know, okay, he's not my rebounder, but he gives me this, and actually get it, mm-hmm. now you can play chess instead of checkers.
Here's something that I want to ask you about Ryan McMahon. I feel like Ryan McMahon is, you know, some of his shots are questionable, but because he has the green light and is such a good shooter, they allow him to shoot them. But I feel like a lot of times Ryan McMahon is, I'll be honest, I haven't seen him run off screens a lot. And that's what I'm trying to ask is, do you think it's at that point, at that time, where we need to start getting some plays to where he is running off screens to get an open look from three?
No.
Yeah.
No. Listen. When this is not the team for that, mm-hmm. you know, this is not the team where he needs to be pulling off the screen, and he's short. Like, anybody can challenge his shot a little tougher. Mm-hmm. Range is his best friend.
Okay.
You know, over movement, you know, playmaking from other people inside out, the better Ray Spalding and honest play, the better Ryan McMahon is going to be. But again, dead eye range is the best thing for him. And he totally delivered. Let me get to this phone before I get too worked up. Sean, thanks for joining us on the Ed Scoring Hotline. What's on your mind?
Hey, Marcus. Hey again, Brian. Listen, I'm not into moral victories. I call in the show all the time, and I'm all the time talking about, you know, we would've and could've and all that. Look, Virginia's press even said that was the best game that Virginia played their best game, and we was in within five of them with a couple minutes left to go. Sure, it was a questionable play by Big Ray, but that's all right. Look, I like where this team is going because, you know, I go back to it a million times. You know, the Kentucky game, we got down by 14, and we laid down, we quit playing. There's no quitting this team. And, you know, we play Purdue really good at home. We play Virginia really good at home. We're right there. And I guess the frustrating part for me as a fan is, like you were saying, with our player like Adele, I just figured he would be more Donovan Mitchell-esque at this time of the year. And I'm really questioning why Q wasn't in the game in the last few minutes of the game. Not to take anything away from Ryan or anything, but Ryan didn't even shoot the ball in the last couple minutes. So I'm just wondering what's going on as far as that goes. But I'll hang up and listen. But I just think that we played a great game.
No, absolutely. Listen, I do too. I do too. And again, it's one of those things. I'm not going to apologize for my harshness, because my harshness and criticism was still correct. You know, like, the plays that I point out are still plays that can happen, right? But perspective has kind of softened me a little bit. Again, Ryan McMahon did exactly what he needed to do. He took care of the ball. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He kept his man in containment. I mean, there the and one that he gives. Oh man, I'm actually looking at the father lunge at Nasser in the court. Did you see that?
Yeah, the guy who had three women sexually assaulted by Larry Nassar, and then he tried to run at him during court.
Yep.
And was tackled. Yes, yeah. That happened earlier.
I did not see that.
I don't necessarily blame the guy.
Right. This is some compelling stuff. Yep. But. I hate making that transition.
No, what you were saying is what kind of.
I've just named four people that brought it, yeah. Right? That absolutely brought it.
Yeah.
For starters, listen, VJ King opens up the game with a pull up jump shot. How good was that feeling when he hit the first 2 points of the game?
I like it a lot.
He went exactly.
We needed that.
He went exactly where he needed to go.
Just like Steve said, he was putting up shots.
To start having a good game.
Yeah.
Like, he came, he wasn't passive. It wasn't necessarily a bad shot. I mean, listen.
He showed that he was still confident.
Yeah, he got the wide open look. He may have, you know, he may have been a touch out of rhythm, but that wasn't a bad decision. You know, he took the right shots. Like, those guys did exactly what they needed to do to start becoming a great team.
I think David Padgett had a hell of a game plan. I think that was his best coach.
Greg Paulus, give him his scout credit too.
Greg Paulus too. I think the whole staff, that this was their best game as a whole, even though we pulled off the loss, and they weren't afraid to kind of mix it up. You know, they started Malik Williams over Onis. They played Ryan McMahon more minutes than they played Q. They told VJ King to go in and jack up shots at the beginning. It was a different kind of idea than what we've seen in some of the previous games, but it worked.
They, honest Mahmood, he pitches a shot that puts us on transition going the other way, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was a, listen, and to be comfortable with this, it was one of those, give me that boop.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Like you saw Honest in a motion, like his, what's it called? Like his fast twitch muscles.
Mm-hmm.
That's my difference. You got smooth Honest and you got fast twitch Honest. You saw fast twitch Honest show up. You know, like I said, even if nothing happens, the floaters that got hit over Honest, they were raindrop floaters, mm-hmm. right? Like cloud precipitation floaters.
Well, people don't understand. You don't have to get a block to make a difference. You can change the direction of a shot when you're a guy like Honest.
And the shots actually went in the most difficult ways possible. Like I said, like I can't, again, I was afraid. Here's a perspective on this. I was afraid yesterday or after the game to acknowledge how well they played, because when you play well, you want to be rewarded with the win. Mm-hmm. You don't want to feel like you can play well and lose. Cause if you play well and lose, then it's like, okay, where's up? But they played perfect.
Yeah.
No, Virginia, almost, you know?
It is weird, that the concept, because, you know, with David Padgett as our coach, the way we played against Virginia this year, we're like, you know, that was our best game. We played great, and we lost by 10. If this was turned around and Rick Pitino was the coach, we would all be frustrated right now, because we'd be like, man, we should have beat them. Like, that was our chance to beat them. And it would be a completely different narrative.
We still think that was our chance to beat them.
I have a question for you, and I think there's something going on with Jordan Wara behind the scenes. Like maybe he's in the doghouse or something with Coach Padgett, because I thought that this was like a perfect game for him because he's a shooter. Brian McMahon, we saw excel because, you know, he was a shooter. And I thought that they would play Jordan Wara more minutes. I don't think it was as much of a Dwayne Sutton game. I could be wrong. I would have given some of Sutton's minutes to Wara and see what he could have done with it.
I think Wara has poor shot selection. He's a scorer, shooter mentality. He gets that thing. He wants to make something happen. We've needed him to spark the team on offense, right? He's come in, you know, been the spark, led us to some good things. Now, what the problem is here is I can understand that David Padgett feels like, hey, out of all the teams we're ever going to play, poor shot selection will kill you.
You got to be as disciplined as they
you
are
have
in
this
to game.
Be more disciplined in this game than any other game, and I think that's what he did. I mean, but I will say this: if I'm a Jordan Wara supporter, I'm going to say you went with Darius Perry a little extra mm-hmm. outside of discipline. But of course, they're two different positions. You got to, you know, you probably held Quentin Snyder to the discipline shot rule, mm-hmm. right? Maybe in hindsight, he's kind of like me. In hindsight, it wasn't a bad take, you know? But during the game, what are you doing? So I'm sure he can have the same, you know, emotional thing as I am. Or he could have, you know, Trent over the side, like, get him out of there. You know, like, who knows? Yeah, quick commercial break. Special guest. One of the funnest guests we always have, people. One of those day one guests are coming up on the other side of the commercial break. Midday with Marcus Maben, 8150. 93.9 is the number on 93.9.
Keep it locked on Middays with Marcus Maben on 93.9 The Ville.
Welcome back. Midday with Marcus Maben, 81-50. 93.9 is the number. 93.9 is the station. People, the weather has officially gotten colder. So now it's time for you to save $1,000 on a train comfort system at dfhcompany.com. DFH will give you $1,000 off a new train comfort system, or ask them about really low financing. It's hard to stop a train, and it's hard not to call DFH Company today at 968-6222, or look them up online at dfhcompany.com. Visit dfhcompany.com for complete program eligibility dates, details, and restrictions, subject to credit approval. People, you have enjoyed this ride with me. And when I say this ride, this Radio 93.9 ride, you have enjoyed this ride from the moment I set foot in the city of Louisville. People, only few were there on legitimate day one. And one of them is right here joining me on Midday with Marcus Maben, the great, the original possession receiver, Lavelle Boyd. What's going on, my man? What's going on?
What's going on, man? How you doing?
Good. Always good. Lavelle, I appreciate you taking the time out of your day. I know this is, you're revving up for this to be a very, very busy time. I mean, we'll definitely get to that. But before we get to that, you know, I always have to ask the best question, the most difficult, the most uncomfortable question.
Yep.
Eagles or the Patriots?
Oh, man. All right, so the Patriots have done their thing quite some time. Time for a new crowning. So I would like to see the Eagles win. I don't think it's going to be an easy task for the Eagles, but I'd like to see the Eagles win.
So we're going heart against your mind, or yeah. you just like to see you. So you, but you don't necessarily have a rooting interest for this one.
I don't have a rooting interest, man. My brother no longer plays, Deion Branch. So
right.
Patriots are not a favorite of mine. But Tom Brady, it's hard to go against him and win. So, but I'd like to see the Eagles win just because I think it's time for a new crowning of the NFL. I think the Eagles have the potential to be a really great team moving forward also.
Okay, talking with Lavelle Boyd here on 93.9. Now let's get into the meat and potatoes of what's going on with Lavelle Boyd. Speaking of new crowning, P300 is rolling. Explain That's to people right. exactly what that is and what you have on the landscape.
Well, you know, I spent quite a few years as a head coach in high school athletics for football. And my number one priority as a coach was to make sure that I extended an opportunity to the kids who played for me.
Right.
A lot of coaches never send out film. A lot of coaches never take their kids to camp, you know, but they always – you know, find a way to make the winning about team. Well, I think part of team has something to do with coaches also being a part of the team and helping these young men make themselves, get themselves to a different level. So we created, when I stopped coaching, we created myself and some friends, we created an opportunity for kids to kind of, you know, showcase their talents. It's a lot of kids who go unnoticed every year. And what we wanted to do was create an opportunity for kids to showcase their talent in front of college coaches. So we created prestigious 300 sports. We cover all sports. We have a program for all kids, all age levels. But the combine that we do every year, this is our fourth consecutive year, we put over 125 kids in Division I football over the last 4 years. We have a big class of kids that came through our program that's going to be signing in a few days. So we created prestigious 300 sports to give kids extra opportunity outside of the high school football field. And we're just excited about the opportunity that it gives for kids.
Now, when you say big class, I mean, we were talking about it. I didn't know if you were trying to be modest. You are expected to sign roughly how many in the upcoming class?
16 or 17 kids that came through our program over the last year. We'll be signing Division I scholarships. We'll have maybe another 8 to 7 signing Division II. You know, it's always a great thing. Anytime kids give themselves a chance to play after high school, kind of, you know, give yourself a chance to figure things out. So, you know, it's big anytime, whether it's one kid or 100 kids, it's always big. It's a kid that's going to have another opportunity outside of the high school football field.
Right, right. And it seems to always be humbling when we speak about, you know, because here's the thing. We talk about college sports and we get lost in the business and the corporation and the big aspect. And then you have to remind yourself, like at a prestigious 300, that you've just helped put, you know, provided a bridge to get a child's education paid for. Like, actually, yeah. You know, it's like when you rewind everything and go right back to the building blocks of competition and, you know, being made into, because, you know, we do the LeVar Ball things and we do the, you know, what's wrong with sports and who's in control of what. But when you go back to the 15, 16, 17, I'm putting this kid in front of a college coach today to get his school paid for, to get his life, you know, started off, his adult life started off on the best possible foot. I mean, kind of go back to that moment where you say a scholarship is really a scholarship.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it's all about. And this is one of the reasons why I want, you know, the local coaches and everybody to get involved with this. This is a platform for kids. It's not just about, you know, somebody making money or something like that. It's never been about money for me at all. This is a platform for our kids, man. Like, it's obvious. If you've been a head coach in high school and you've been at the same school for 10 years and you can't look at yourself and say, I had one kid sign a Division I scholarship, then you're wasting people's time as a coach, because your number one job as a coach is to make sure that you're creating a platform for your kids. So this is what it's all about. For the coaches who don't want to do their due diligence, what we'll do is create it for you. We'll give your kids the opportunity to get in front of college coaches, you know, run 40s, go in one-on-one competition, you know, just the stuff that helps a coach to see them. That's what it's all about.
Well, talking with Lavelle Boyd here on 93.9. Now, well, Lavelle, let me tell you, or let me ask, when you say a prestigious 300, a camp, it's, are you met with skepticism by other coaches? Do they feel like you're ever trying to, like, poach? Because, you know, anytime you start something new and put a program together, there are going to be people who like the status quo, who don't want to change the way things are done. But when you get everybody in one room together, do you face coaches that kind of have a problem with you or try to steer the kids clear? Or does everyone appreciate that you're just putting together a good opportunity for kids to be seen?
Well, last year when we did the combine, we had over 120 kids. This year we're going to do something new. We're going to extend it to the middle school kids for them to start preparing themselves also for the high school combine. So it'll be easy for them to make those transitions when they grow. So, but for the most part, coaches have always supported. There are always going to be people who don't support what you do, but that doesn't stop anything. You have to keep moving. You have to keep doing whatever you have to do, because this is modest. This is something that I saw was a need. And what I want to do is, because coaches always ask me, like, does Louisville have any talent? Do they have any talented kids? And there's no way for me to show the coaches. I mean, I can say, hey, go check out this kid at this school and check out this kid at that school. But it's different when a coach will have a chance to actually lay his eyes on that kid. There's nothing going on here like that. Like I say, in Florida, this is an everyday thing. They do camps and combines for kids, and that's why Florida is a football hotbed. What I'm trying to do, the place where I played high school football, the place where I played college football, the place where I coach high school football, is I want to create opportunities for our kids so that it's not a hard thing for a kid who's very talented to get a scholarship.
Talking with Lavelle Boyd here on 93.9. Now, walk me through the process. First, help me decide that your combine is for my kid. You know, my kid plays, you know, you mentioned you opened up to middle school, you know, kids. How do I say, okay, my kid is talented, what is he going to learn? And kind of walk me through the process of saying, I need to put my kid into P300 or find that, you know, the combine or multiple combines to get him to. Like just kind of walk us through that process.
Okay, so I'll start with the middle school kids first. The middle school kids is an introductory type thing. some of the kids have never ran a 40-yard dash. This will be the first time they'll run a 40-yard dash and understand how fast they ran it. They've never done a vertical jump. This will be the first time they'll actually do a vertical jump. So these are first-time things for kids. Secondly, for the high school kids, it's very important to know your numbers and to understand where you need to be in order for you to succeed. If you are a high school running back and you run a 4.5 40, you're pretty on point with where you need to be a college running back. So these are all things that will help you understand where you are and what you need to be doing to get to where you want to go. My thing is this. Anybody who knows me, I've helped put enough kids in college that I can tell you I know what I'm doing. A lot of coaches who may not agree with it and may not send their kids, they don't have anything to point at and say, hey, this is a kid I helped. So I'm telling you, this is how it's done. There's a lot of people who know how it's done, but what we want to do is afford an opportunity for all the kids to get a chance.
Talking with LaVell Boyd. Sorry about that. No. I didn't want to cut you off, but I kind of have the moment when I hear you say you've done it, when I hear you say, listen, let's be honest. I am much more full of myself than you are. I post pictures of myself dunking all the time. You, in all seriousness, you don't seem to be a guy who, you know, posts a lot of pictures buddied up with guys that you helped, you know, because you see that a lot. You see a lot of guys saying, well, I put this guy in the league and I did this with this guy, you know, on their social media platforms. Do you purposely like just make it more about the kids and not? Because let's face it. If you showed people more of what you've done and what you do, it would drive more attention. But you seem to be really making a concerted effort to not kind of look like you're promoting through the kids.
Right. I mean, that's what it's all about, because at the end of the day, I've done everything that I want to do with football. The only thing I have now is to give, and I'm going to give. So this prestigious 300 sports. And you know, the crazy thing about it is I'm connected with so many guys and so many ex-teammates who are doing great things. Like Damon Dorsey has his own thing going on down in Alabama. Mm-hmm. Josh Richardson, who was a lineman at Louisville, has a great thing going on in Atlanta. It's a lot of guys who are doing these things. We just need to make sure that people understand why we're doing it. It's all about giving an opportunity.
Okay, going back to walking through the process. Okay, you, high school kids, the you said the kids need to know their numbers. They can compare their numbers. They can start. Can they start setting their expectations as far as level of scholarship? And how important is it for the parents that they start knowing the numbers and where to go?
Right. And that's what it's all about. We actually have before each combine, we'll have a meeting with the parents. And it's called Recruiting 101. And what we'll do is give out a booklet of where you need to be at NCAA-wise, what should your GPA be, test scores, and then how the recruiting process goes. That's what it's all about, because it's an information source. That's what we want to be also. We want to create opportunity for the kids, and we want to be a information source for the parents. So that's what it's all about, man.
So you have an actual full like educational class for the parents to tell them, you know, how to, what did you call it? Recruiting 101?
Yeah, Recruiting 101. What we do is it's about a 30 minute blast with the parents, kind of letting them know exactly what we do and then what they need to do to help their kids. And this is what it's all about. Because, I mean, think about it. A lot of parents have never went through this. A lot of parents have no idea about the recruiting process. People can tell you all kind of different things. We're going to direct you in the right places so you can get the information you need. And you can also get a better understanding of where your kid is and whether your kid's a Division I athlete, whether he's an NAIA kid, a JUCO kid, a Division II or Division III kid. That's what it's all about.
Now, tell us where we can contact you. Give us all the sources and give us the date so we can tentatively listen. We're going to have you back on. We might run a commercial to make sure we drive everybody humanly possible to the March date. But give us your information to contact you. Make sure you repeat it over and over again and give us some of the dates that people, you know, can look forward to in different areas.
On Instagram, you can contact us at prestigious 300. On our website is www.p300sports.com. Like we say, we have all kinds of information on the website already. And anybody who wants to contact me personally, I'll give you my number right now, 502-714-2104.
714-2104. That's your real number, man. What are you doing?
That's my real number. This is what we do every day.
No, well, Lavelle, anything else you want to add before I get you out of here?
I just want to thank you for bringing me on. And also, anybody who has a child that's, whether you be a middle school kid, whether you be a high school kid, we have opportunities available for your kids to find out where they are. On March 10th at Louisville Doss High School, then we'll be in Montgomery on the 17th. We'll be in Tampa on the 25th. We'll be in Atlanta April 21st. We'll be in Houston April 28th. And we'll be in Los Angeles May 12th. So thank you, man. I appreciate you having me.
Lavelle, as always, I enjoy you coming on. We didn't do too much reminiscing. We keep ourselves out of trouble this time.
Yeah, without a doubt, man. Thanks for having me again, bro. Everybody up there, tell them I say hello, man.
Definitely. I will appreciate it. That was Lavelle Boyd. That was the original. People, this is funny. You talk about trailblazers. Didn't that sound like a trailblazer to you? You know what's funny, people? When you had never heard the word possession receiver in Louisville, Kentucky, until Lavelle Boy. You had never heard the phrase Afros at the University of Louisville until Lavelle Boy. Boy, we had a squad. Lavelle, AJ, and Ivan Green on your offense.
Oh, Ivan's one of my favorite players.
God. Do y'all realize he's a receiver? He's my size. He's a lot bigger than me, but he's my size. Ivan Green is my size. AJ is the most explosive player ever. I'm just going to cancel the rest of the show and go start looking at YouTube games of my football team back in the day. No, I'm just playing. We're having too much fun. Midday with Marcus Maven. 8150, 93.9 is the number on 939 The Ville.